The modern economy that many of us live in is an economic miracle. If an oil crisis occurs in the Middle East, gas prices in the Western United States will surge upward to reflect the new state of supply and demand, and the high prices now mean high profits, and so investments in the economy begin to shift to producing oil or to producing alternative forms of energy that can substitute for oil. People often wonder, have market systems always been with us? Was the Roman Empire, for example, a beneficiary of something like capitalism or free markets? But if not, then what mechanism made Rome so prosperous? It certainly seems like all the monuments and literary works and coins suggest a vibrant, dynamic economic system. How could it have been anything else? In this episode, I'd like to tackle that topic. Was the Roman economy free market? Was it kind of like our economy, or was it something quite different? Let's talk about it on this episode of the Pax Romana podcast. Episode 34, Rome's Urban Economy. Nobel Prize-winning economist F.A. Hayek said the following: "Nothing is more misleading than the conventional formulae of historians who represent the achievements of a powerful state as the culmination of cultural evolution. It has often marked its end." That's Hayek in Chapter 2 of The Fatal Conceit. Hayek's saying something incredibly profound. Great empires, like the Roman Empire, leave behind impressive monuments to their powerful state. The buildings it built, its grain distribution system, its coins, its laws. These things suggest that Rome reached a kind of pinnacle, but I'm not so sure. So today I'd like to propose that we think a little bit differently about some of Rome's most dramatic achievements. Are there other ways of seeing, for example, the high rate of urbanization in the Roman Empire? So let's start with that, the cities. Around 15 to 20% of the population of the Roman Empire lived in cities. I don't know if that number seems small or large to you, but relative to other empires prior to the Industrial Revolution, Rome's urbanization rate is quite high. In fact, we can think of the Roman Empire 2,000 years ago as an empire of cities. They created, on the one hand, a privileged class of regime-adjacent supporters, local elites who were granted special treatment, especially economic wealth, in exchange for supporting the ideology of Rome's emperors. But then on the other hand, cities were places where urban elites could be mobilized and deployed to carry the enormous financial, administrative, and cultural burden of running the Roman Empire. And these urban elites, whether they were local city councilors or wealthy patrons, however their power worked exactly wasn't important. The fact is, they were expected to lead and to provide and to reinforce a unified vision of empire. And they had to do this without having private armies. They needed to generate and repeat imperial ideology and persuade their populations that Rome's rule was ultimately what was best. And it's no surprise that at the center of Rome's empire was the city of Rome. This is what the orator Elius Aristides, who wrote an oration to Rome in AD 155, said about the great cosmopolis of Rome. Quote, "Around the Mediterranean lies the continents far and wide, pouring an endless flow of goods to Rome. There is brought from every land and sea whatever is brought forth by the seasons and is produced by all countries, rivers, lakes, and the skills of Greeks and foreigners, so that anyone who wants to behold all the products must either journey throughout the whole world to see them or else come to this city. All things converge here to trade, seafaring, agriculture, metallurgy, all the skills which exist and have existed, anything that is begotten and grows, whatever cannot be seen here belongs in the category of non-existence. That's Aristides' oration to Rome. Aristides describes Rome as an emporium. And on the one hand, the Roman Empire makes the Mediterranean and beyond far more connected and in some ways much smaller than ever before. And it's an open question as to whether the great connectivity of the Roman Empire actually led to real per capita economic growth, that GDP actually may have gone up during the Roman Empire, which would be very, very rare for the pre-industrial world. If you were to look at a graph of estimated GDP over the last several thousand years of human history, there would basically be a flat line up until around the time of the Industrial Revolution. In fact, some have called the pre-industrial economy a static economy. But there is some evidence that the Roman economy was a true powerhouse in terms of luxury goods, silks from China, amber from the forests of Northern Europe, ivory from sub-Saharan Africa. All these things found their way to Rome. And of course, they came there largely through merchant activity. Another sign of Rome's potential economic sophistication is in the labor-saving technology that we see proliferating in the Roman Empire. From Great Britain to Syria, through Italy, the Balkans, and Spain, we find plenty of evidence of water milling technology, water wheels, in particular, saws that were moved by wheels turned by running water, saws that could cut lumber, but also that could cut stone. These types of technologies were not just interesting in their own right, but they had the power to generate capital, that is, to create surplus wealth that could then be reinvested in the economy for production. In fact, some ancient historians have commented that all of the ingredients necessary for an industrial revolution were available to the Romans. And so all of this brings up a question. If Rome had the technology and the connectivity to industrialize almost 2,000 years ahead of schedule, why did Rome not experience an industrial revolution? To answer this question, I'd actually like to go back to cities. We tend to think of cities as evidence of Rome's economic sophistication, its market activity, and its high production. But actually, I think we need to think a lot differently about Rome's cities. Unlike in the Industrial Revolution, when production happened in the cities, that is, the factories were in the cities, workers were in the cities, that's where goods were produced, Roman cities were where goods were consumed. Resources were extracted from the countryside, particularly from the agricultural system, and then were finished in those places and only brought into the cities for purposes of selling them and then consuming them. It was in the cities where elites lived and where they competed with one another. How did they compete? They built monuments like libraries and theaters and baths. They put their names on those buildings. They ran for office in the cities. In the Roman world, cities were arenas for elites to compete for glory. And because of this, huge demand was created in cities, whether we're talking marbles from Egypt and the Aegean, lead for aqueducts and bathhouses, slaves, animals, exotic foods, spices, and textiles. And so the infrastructure necessary to move these goods into the cities was really designed to help elites display status, not so much to create wealth or to run businesses or those sorts of things that we would associate with modern cities. Grain, for example, that was extracted from the countryside might make its way to the city of Rome, but so that an elite could hand it out to the general population and therefore receive status as a benefactor. The goods that made it to Rome were not really investments. They did not increase capital. In fact, if anything, they often consumed the surplus that was created in the countryside. And what about those people in the countryside who found themselves constantly being pilfered of what they produced? Well, they lived an especially precarious existence. These were self-sufficient farmers, producing what they and their families needed to survive, and perhaps just enough extra to pay their taxes or to sell at the occasional market. It was very difficult for these people to do just about anything else. You have to remember, it was difficult to travel more than even a few miles from where somebody lived. Overland transport was expensive. Maritime transport was easier, for sure, but it's not like the seas were not without risk. Storms raged on the seas from about October until March, or sometimes even April. So even if, for example, there were huge variances in prices within a region, it would be very difficult for somebody to take goods from an area where they could be bought cheaply and then transport them 15 miles away to an area where they could be sold high and a profit could be made. It just was not easy to do that. And how is that information going to travel anyway? Again, that would assume that somebody had a reason to go 15 miles, which often people didn't. So the conditions to create entrepreneurs were not very strong in the Roman world. And as a result, the economy simply did not become very efficient. Capitalism loves entrepreneurs. It rewards them by high profits for producing capital that the rest of us can enjoy, for increasing our per capita economic growth. But those people were conspicuously underrepresented in the Roman Empire. Merchants were more likely to stick to predictable routes and localities and to avoid risks. A single bad harvest or a single shipwreck could wipe somebody out, and it was very difficult to catch up. As a result, wealth was constantly invested and reinvested in more stable assets, particularly land. And so it was the land-owning elites who were always on top in the Roman Empire, and not merchants and traders. So with even merchants in the Roman Empire wanting to avoid risk, that made cities, again, all the more important. Cities offered Roman traders a predictable market, predictable demands for the goods that they offered, especially if they were goods like grain, because there would be predictable state contracts for those things. Local officials wanted to buy up grain so that they could redistribute it to the population. So there was always regular demand for grain in cities. The same was true, by the way, of armies and army camps. Armies were a stable customer for producers and suppliers of things like grain and olive oil and wine and metals. And the most predictable entity of all to do business with was the Roman imperial state itself. The state was involved in some of the most lucrative economic activities, resource extraction, for example, public works, supplying the army, supplying cities, and transporting goods. These kinds of things were not left to market activity, but were distributed based on political access and influence. And so the best entrepreneurs were not economic entrepreneurs, but political ones, people who were especially good at networking, at bribery, at figuring out how to gain and expand social and political influence and power. What am I getting at? The Roman economy was one in which political influence and power could often determine economic opportunities, not necessarily merit or profitability or the ability to serve customers. And there was really no strong private and public division in the Roman economy. It was perfectly normal and even reasonable for an individual to use their political power and connection for personal gain. So much economic activity was therefore oriented towards building and reinforcing states, whether we're talking about the imperial state or more localized governmental entities like city governments and so on. And of course, there were markets and market activity. There was supply and demand in the ancient world. I'm not saying that people didn't pursue profit. Of course they did. But their values, the things that they wanted, were in many ways constrained by the world in which they lived and its value system. And so without a kind of economic ideology, the Roman Empire was nevertheless bound in a state-directed model for their economy. And there were some advantages to this. Obviously, the Roman state could create large-scale operations that overcame small-scale risk. So state infrastructure, whether it was Roman roads or ports or bridges, could reduce transportation costs. The Roman grain supply system could bring grain from a place like Egypt to Rome in amounts and at speeds that may not have been possible otherwise. Violence and coercion, after all, can be powerful motivators. And so the Roman Empire did create a unified legal and economic system. A bureaucracy gradually developed that became stronger and stronger over time. And yet, there were tremendous disadvantages, which we will see play out as this podcast looks towards the end of the Pax Romana. In a system in which the state is so dominant, we can expect economic stagnation and even regression. Profits help direct capital towards areas of growth. And then there's Hayek's famous knowledge problem that Rome had to deal with. Because the state was involved so heavily in certain areas, especially some crucial areas in the Roman economy, it was very difficult to make economic calculations, even for those Romans who could have and would have attempted to maximize their profit. If the state, for example, offers a set price at which it buys wheat, no matter what the market conditions are, markets for wheat will intrinsically become distorted. This will affect production. It will affect the way people store grain. It will lead to waste and inefficient distributions. It will lead to crops not reflecting what the population actually wants. But probably the most important problem that Rome faced with its use of state bulk to create economies of scale was the lack of diversification. A robust market tends to diversify and spread risk out. If one section of the economy fails, or one company or one individual, the network reacts and compensates, and the freer the market, the more quickly and easily that compensation tends to happen. But systems that are heavily dependent upon a single state entity or any monopolistic entity to manage one or more crucial industries will find themselves prosperous in the good times, but systematically at risk in the bad times. The city of Rome's grain supply was surprisingly dependent on just a few major breadbaskets. And so, as we'll see in future episodes, when grain harvests began to falter in the middle of the 2nd century AD, Rome's food supply struggles. And then there are cascading crises that follow. The kinds of market forces which would clear out bad investments and bad decisions can't operate with state rules and institutions gumming up the complicated mechanisms that make an economy. So while the Roman economy was impressive and its consumption monumental, even Rome's greatest surviving achievements belie an economic system that was surprisingly fragile.
Thanks for listening to the Pax Romana podcast. For more information, including a list of primary sources and further reading, check the show notes. Music by Red Productions and Exocor. Follow Dr. Colin Elliott on X at ProfCPE or email colin@paxromanapodcast.com. Listen to more episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere podcasts are available. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.